I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Redistricting is complex and prone to political missteps. State lawmakers are proving that right now as they gather in Tallahassee to put together new congressional maps free of political influence. This hour, we'll explore some of the pitfalls of redistricting and how some lawmakers say the process could be improved. Congresswoman Corrine Brown says the Supreme Court got it wrong. We'll also hear from Panhandle Republican State Representative Mike Hill, who says the court is out of bounds with its ruling. What exactly is going on in Tallahassee? Political scientist Aubrey Jewett walks us through the complex process, while former state lawmaker Paula Dockery and the chair of the Orange County Democratic Party, Carlos Guillermo Smith, explore what these new maps mean for the future of Florida politics. That's ahead on Intersection. None of the legislature's justifications for its gerrymandered version of District 5 and none of its complaints about an alternative east-west configuration can withstand legal scrutiny. That's what the Florida Supreme Court wrote about Democratic Congresswoman Corrine Brown's district, which meanders from Jacksonville to Orlando and is at the heart of the redistricting case. Corrine Brown says the court was wrong. Here's what she told reporters in Orlando last week.
The federal courts drew the district. And the Voting Rights Act still stands, and it is the law of the land. And I'm not an attorney, but the last time I checked with them, federal law supersedes state law.
And as to the notion that the district was gerrymandered to benefit her.
And this is not about me. What happens is if I die today or tomorrow? I want to make sure that somebody looked like me. An African-American. That's what the 1965 Voting Rights Act was all about. Making sure that African-Americans had an opportunity, no guarantee.
Congresswoman Brown was taking legal action to try to stop the redistricting process. That lawsuit's now been withdrawn. But there's been some protest from state lawmakers, too. Representative Mike Hill, a Republican from Pensacola, says the justices of the Florida Supreme Court should be made to explain their decision and then sit in on the process to make sure lawmakers are getting it right. He's calling for them to be subpoenaed to explain their decision to lawmakers. I'm joined on the phone by Representative Hill. He joins us from his home in Pensacola. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, hello, Matthew. It's my pleasure.
Well, Representative, you wrote in a letter to House Speaker Steve Crisafulli, the House leader, that lawmakers shouldn't pass any new maps. What bothers you about this ruling?
Well, several things. First of all, I consider it unconstitutional and that the Florida Supreme Court has overstepped their boundaries, their authority, in requiring us to redraw the maps. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is twofold. First of all, they said it must be done within 100 days, which requires us to go into a special session. Well, according to our Florida Constitution, only the governor, the Senate president, and the Speaker of the House have the constitutional authority to call the legislature in a special session, not the Supreme Court, which is what they have done in this case. So they overstepped their authority and boundaries there. Secondly, the Florida Constitution confers upon the legislature only to draw the House districts, the congressional districts, and the state Senate districts. That authority rests solely with the Florida legislature. Well, our Supreme Court has stepped beyond their authority and has taken upon themselves to draw those maps. And they've done it two ways. First, they have dictated how District 5 is to look. That's Congresswoman Corrine Brown's district. They have dictated how it is to look, which is beyond their authority. They can't do that. Mm-hmm. And we have already submitted two maps to the Supreme Court for their approval, and they've tossed out each one, now wanting us to do it a third time. And so they won't be satisfied until the maps look like how they want it to look, which essentially means they are drawing the maps, and they do not have the constitutional authority to do that. So my contention is that we should not redraw the maps. The Florida Supreme Court does not have the authority to draw the maps or call us into special session.
So, Representative Mike Hill, you're saying they should have to come back and explain the rationale for their decision, and then you've also said you would like them to sit in and kind of make sure that things are done to their satisfaction?
Well, I was saying that should we redraw the maps, if that's what the legislature agrees to do, or we are compelled to do it for some reason, that we should have the Supreme Court there so that we won't have to again redraw the maps. What I mean by that is we need to know, what is your intent? What is your purpose for what the map should look like, so that we're not going to give you another map, you look at it and go, no, you still got it wrong. You know, and we keep going, playing this game of going back and forth, trying to satisfy them, special session after special session. Mm-hmm. That instead, if we have them there in front of us, okay, what is your intent? What should it look like? And tell us the basis of how you came to this conclusion that we did not draw the maps correctly.
Isn't some of that in the ruling from the Supreme Court, you know, the rationale for their conclusions?
Partly it is, but it's not explicitly clear. If it was clear, then we would not be going back the third time to draw the maps. It should have been clear the first time, but it wasn't. It wasn't clear the second time. So now, again, no open direction. They just said redraw the map except for Corrine Brown's district, which mm-hmm. must go now more east and west instead of north and south, stepping outside of their boundaries to do that. So we need to know, what is your intent? What is your purpose? Let us see your internal document that helped you come to this conclusion, exactly like they said the legislature had to do. Show us your documents. The Supreme Court said to the Florida legislature, show us your documents to let us know how you came to this conclusion. Mm-hmm. Well, all I'm saying is, show us your documents of how you came to this conclusion. See, that's only appropriate. The whole idea is the executive, judicial, and legislative are to be checks and balances on the other. But right now, we have a Supreme Court which does not have any checks on it. It is out of balance. And it has assumed authority and powers that it does not have according to our Constitution.
I think the argument from the other side, though, would be that the Supreme Court is doing its job and acting as a balance on the legislature.
They could say that, but they wouldn't be justified in saying that because they have gone outside the boundaries of their authority. Mm-hmm. The Florida legislature has the sole authority of drawing the districts. Now, if someone doesn't like it, okay, you can express your dislike and your opinion about that and even take it to court. And so we go to court. But what the Florida Supreme Court has done after they've made a decision, they have again stepped outside of their boundaries. And instead of it going back to a trial court, which it should, they said, we're going to maintain jurisdiction. So when you redraw those maps, you give it back to us, instead of going to a trial court. Mm-hmm. And they have no authority to do that.
Do you think this is the last of it? Do you think once these maps are drawn, you'll be back in court and back to the lawmakers will be called back to redraw them again?
I suspect so, because it is not going to please everyone. Unless we can subpoena Supreme Court, which we have the authority to do, to come and sit in front of us and say, okay, tell us what are your intents, what should it look like. That will stop this game of us submitting a map to them, of them saying, no, you still didn't have it right. Mm-hmm. At least we can, in a very open and transparent manner, have them come before us and say, okay, this is what it should look like. Then when we draw it like that, which, by the way, they don't have the authority to do, but then if we draw it like that, we know that that should be the end of it, that it shouldn't be, you still didn't get it right. Come back and do it again. Mm-hmm. So the way it is now, if we just draw these maps and submit it to them, I don't think that's going to be the end of it.
Mike Hill is a Republican from Pensacola. He's a Florida House representative. Thank you so much for joining me, Mike.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we come back, political science professor Aubrey Jewett explains the art and science of drawing new maps and what can go wrong. Intersection returns after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. The state Supreme Court has ordered the Florida legislature to go back to the drawing board and craft new maps for 8 out of 27 congressional districts. In its ruling, the court found that, quote, the redistricting process and resulting map were tainted by unconstitutional intent to favor the Republican Party and incumbents. The court also noted it probably won't be the last time lawmakers will face a challenge to redistricting, and that partisan political gerrymandering has been entrenched for years in the politics of crafting Florida's district boundaries. I'm joined in the studio by Aubrey Jewett. He's a political scientist and a lecturer at the University of Central Florida. Aubrey Jewett, thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here today.
Well, let's start with the amendment that began this whole redistricting process, the Fair Districts Amendment. What does this amendment say?
Well, in brief, it gives guidelines to the legislature when they draw the districts. It says that they have to draw districts without the intent of favoring or disfavoring political parties or incumbents, that they have to draw districts that allow minorities to elect representatives of their choosing, and where possible, they have to draw the districts in a compact fashion that follows existing geographic boundaries like counties and cities.
Mm-hmm. And lawmakers redraw congressional districts every 10 years when they get the new census. So how did this amendment change the way lawmakers typically draw up those districts?
Well, the biggest change is that before these amendments, legislators were able to gerrymander for both incumbents and political parties, and they could do so however much they wanted. There was no law against it. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that gerrymandering may not be fair, but it's not unconstitutional. And so it was a state constitutional amendment that finally put some guidelines. So basically what we've seen in the past, Democrats controlled all the redistrictings up through 2002 and then Republicans starting in 2002. And all those redistrictings, you saw rampant partisan and incumbent gerrymandering. When Democrats were in charge, they tried to favor the Democrats as much as possible. And of course, in 2002, when Republicans first took over, they said, turnabout's fair play. Now we're going to try to advantage Republicans as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And of course, every incumbent who was in office that wanted to run again would go and lobby the legislature and say, please draw me as good a district as I have now or a better district and keep me in my district so that the constituents still know me. So all that used to happen with the Fair District Amendment. None of that is supposed to happen.
So, Aubrey Jewett, according to the Supreme Court this time, what did the legislature get wrong?
Well, what the Florida courts decided was that the Republican Party intentionally tried to do partisan gerrymandering and some incumbent gerrymandering, although mostly it was partisan gerrymandering. What the trial court found through the evidence process and both sides presenting evidence was that Republican consultants conspired behind the scenes to try to influence the process. For instance, they would draw a bunch of maps that heavily favored Republicans, and then they would submit them under false names and pretend that they were not Republican maps, just as one example. And what the trial judge found was that some of this bled over into the drawing of the maps.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the trial judge actually did was a fairly limited remedy. He just said there was a couple districts that had to be fixed. He really scolded the Republicans, and particularly these Republican operatives that were working behind the scenes. But he did laud the staffers who actually drew the districts and said there was very little evidence that the staffers were influenced. He also did get on the legislative leaders, though, in the House and some degree in the Senate and say, you know, that they had hidden emails and destroyed emails. So we didn't really know the extent of the workings between the Republican operatives and the legislative leaders. But then what the Florida Supreme Court did, because interesting, here was a case where the Democrats and the League of Women Voters had filed the original lawsuit, and they won at the trial court level. The trial court judge said, yeah, there was partisan gerrymandering. This violates fair districts. We have to make some changes. But the League of Women Voters and these other Democratic supporters said, we are going to appeal the decision even though we won because we don't think the trial judge has required enough changes.
Right. So they said the trial judge didn't go far enough. Now, however, Aubrey Jewett, you have some folks who are saying the state Supreme Court has gone too far. State Representative Mike Hill, for example, he says the Supreme Court is basically overstepping its boundaries by requiring the legislature to come back within 100 days and redraw those maps. Is the court within its rights to do that, though?
It is within its rights now that the Fair Districts Amendments is in the Constitution. Florida Supreme Court is the ultimate authority on what's in the Constitution and what the Florida Constitution means. So, you know, I think they are within their rights, although, of course, you know, there can be disagreement about how much change is required and what they should be allowed to do. In the dissent, it was a 5-2 decision to require much more drastic changes to the congressional map. But the two more conservative justices basically made the same argument as that state representative. He says, you know, there was some problems, but the trial judge, you know, resolved these couple small specific issues. And we think our colleagues are going way beyond, you know, what they should be doing. But, you know, that's disagreements. And in my opinion, they certainly have the constitutional authority to do what they have done.
Mm-hmm. To critics, though, it looks like an activist court swinging things in favor of the Democratic Party in some cases.
Well, definitely. You've got 4 to 5 members on the court who are Democratic-leaning or more progressive, and you've basically got 2 that are pretty conservative. And a lot, not all, but a lot of the cases break down along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much going to be the way it is until the end of Rick Scott's term, when 3 or 4 of these justices all have to have mandatory retirement and we are going to have a bunch of new judges. So whoever gets to replace those justices is really going to have a chance to either keep the court on its same path, meaning, you know, maybe a little more to the left, or could drastically change it and move it a little more to the right.
So, Aubrey Jewett, the state legislature is heading back to Tallahassee for a special session. A base congressional map was released by the legislature. Can you talk us through some of the changes for those district boundaries? Let's start by talking about Corrine Brown's district. It's no longer in this proposed map running from north to south. It's basically been pivoted and kind of moved east to west along the top of the state.
Yes. Now, that was one of the specific things that the Florida Supreme Court required. In fact, they were very detailed. There was about 8 or 10 districts that they said needed changes. And in most cases, they really spelled out exactly what they wanted to see. And Corrine Brown's district was certainly one of them. Her district stretches all the way back to 1992. It was actually originally drawn by the federal courts, because in 1992, the legislature couldn't agree on a new congressional map, and so it went to the courts. So her district, drawn from Jacksonville all the way to Orlando, was actually drawn originally by federal courts. But what the current Florida Supreme Court decided was that it was overly gerrymandered, that in a number of cases, there were specific changes made to her district that were for partisan purposes to help Republicans in surrounding districts. And also they bought the argument that the League of Women Voters and some of these other allied Democratic groups brought. And they said, look, you can draw a district that goes from Jacksonville over to Tallahassee, and it'll be more compact. It'll still have, say, 45-46% African-American population, which is, should be enough to allow minorities to elect representatives of their choosing, and it'll just be more compact, which means it will comply with the Fair Districts Amendment, you know, more correctly.
And yet Corrine Brown is not happy with what the Supreme Court's done. She's filed a lawsuit.
Yes, she has. She made it quite clear when they made their original ruling that she was unhappy. And I do think she has some valid points when she points out that, you know, minority communities, particularly because of histories of discriminations over decades and redlining and not being able to get mortgages, you know, they don't live neatly in existing, you know, county boundaries and this sort of thing. And that also before 1992, before the federal judges drew that district, Florida had not had a black representative in Congress since after the Civil War, during the Reconstruction period when there was Northern troops with guns down here to allow it. And, you know, so from her perspective, she believes that the Florida Supreme Court has, you know, gone too far as well, and mm-hmm. that they are diminishing her district from 50% black to less, and that they are basically violating the Voting Rights Act, which says that you can't have retrogression. You basically can't make minority voters and minority districts worse off than they were before.
What about some of those other districts in Central Florida specifically? What happens to Dan Webster's district?
Well, under the current map that's released, and we have to stress, this isn't the final map. This is, for now, this is the one, though, that the legislature has released called the base map, saying, hey, this is the one that at least, to the best we can determine, will comply with what the Florida Supreme Court has said. But bottom line with Dan Webster's district, because Kareem Brown's district is no longer going to stretch down here, and there's going to be a lot more African-American and Democratic voters in what is currently Dan Webster's district. And so it's going to be much more difficult for him or any other Republican to keep. In fact, a lot of analysts say, hey, if the maps stay the way they are now, Republicans would probably lose that seat. On the other hand, Kareem Brown's district, because it's now going to stretch all the way over to Tallahassee, probably will affect the seat that was just won by Gwen Graham, mm-hmm. who's the daughter of former governor and former Senator Bob Graham. She just knocked off a Republican incumbent.
And she's a rising star in the Democratic Party. They're
she sure
some
is.
On her.
Absolutely, because she was able to knock off a Republican incumbent in an election where Democratic turnout was down, when Obama's numbers were down, and when Republican turnout was up, and she still won. I mean, her father helped her raise a whole lot of money. She's a very capable candidate. Mm-hmm. The district was a kind of a swing district. I mean, it was not real heavily Republican or real heavily Democrat, and she was able to win by just a couple points. But just like down here in Central Florida, where Kareem Brown's district has, you know, sort of disappeared, and that's going to add Democratic voters to Dan Webster's district. Well, up in the Tallahassee area, because Kareem Brown district is going to go there, it's actually going to take away Black and Democratic voters from that existing Gwen Graham district, mm-hmm. which means, according to most analysts, that is probably going to go Republican. She's probably not going to be able to hold that district.
And then looking at the likes of Representative Alan Grayson's district, what happens to the boundaries around there?
Yeah, now that is interesting. In the map that we have seen released right now, the biggest change is that the percentage of Hispanics in that district has dropped. It was 40% Hispanic, originally designed potentially to be a Hispanic district, although in the end, Alan Grayson, a white Jewish Democrat, won, not an Hispanic. But that district has dropped in this base map to about 30% Hispanic. So there's far fewer Hispanics that would be in that district if this map holds. That is possibly open to constitutional challenge as well, a federal constitutional challenge, much as Kareem Brown filed one on hers. Mm-hmm. It's possible you may see someone, coalition of people or an Hispanic resident file suit based on that, saying, hey, you know, we had a district 2 years ago that was 40% Hispanic that was much more likely to allow minorities to elect representatives of their choosing, which is what the Voting Rights Act requires and which is what the Fair District Act requires. And this is at 30%, you know, it's far less likely that we're going to see that. So that we'll have to wait and see what the legislature does. Just because, again, this is the base map, it doesn't mean for sure it's going to stay like that.
But. Mm-hmm. So, Aubrey Jewett, now the Supreme Court says the legislature has to redraw these districts. What's the process?
Well, they're going to come back into special session and actually redraw the maps. I mean, the staff has provided them with a base map, but now all the members, there'll be a committee, of course, at first, but they will look at all the districts and make suggestions for changes. The Florida Supreme Court, once again, though, has laid out some pretty specific rules. And they say, hey, unlike the first time when you seem to do a lot of this behind closed doors and you hid your records or you've said the emails have been deleted or whatever, this time around, you need to keep a total public record of what everyone says and all the changes that are suggested and why changes are suggested. And you have to be able to prove that when you're trying to alter things, you're doing it to comply with fair districts and not to try to advantage some incumbent or not to try to advantage some party. So the spotlight is really going to be on them this time, much more so than the first time around, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be two special sessions, as you know, Aubrey Jewitt. This one coming up is to redraw congressional districts. And then later in the year, lawmakers tackle state Senate districts. Is the process generally the same?
Well, yeah, I think the process will generally be the same with one or two big exceptions. One of the biggest exceptions is that the Senate basically just threw up the white flag, and they did not go. There was a lawsuit underway, but they just basically said, hey, based on what the Florida Supreme Court has said about these congressional districts, we basically acknowledge that they're going to end up ruling the same way about the Senate districts, that there was these Republican operatives and consultants working behind the scenes and that they were tampering and that it influenced the process, and they're going to make us change. So rather than go through all that fight, we'll just agree to change. But the difference right now is they will not have a specific detailed set of suggestions or rules, really, from the Florida Supreme Court on exactly what to do. So that's going to make it a little bit different. Of course, maybe the courts will weigh in before then, but right now, that's one of the biggest differences. You know, with these new congressional districts, the Florida Supreme Court not only said, here are the districts that are problematic, they've also said, here specifically, in most cases, exactly how we want you to fix them. You know, you can make some little other alterations, but these have to be there. Mm-hmm. With the new Florida Senate districts, they do not have that level of detail at this point.
So what districts, Aubrey Jewitt, are you going to be watching in particularly closely during this special session?
Oh, for the congressional district? You know, for our purposes, basically, I'll be interested to see what happens to all the ones right here in Central Florida, because if Corrine Brown's district, which was designed to be a majority African-American district, is no longer, you know, stretches to Orlando, then that means that there are going to be a lot more Black and Democratic voters sort of spread out into three or four other heretofore Republican districts. So that's certainly one of the things I'm going to be looking at. Mm-hmm. Alan Grayson's current congressional district is definitely another one I'm going to be looking at, primarily to see what percentage of Hispanic residents that ends up with. Because initially, with Alan Grayson announcing for the Senate, there was a lot of talk that Darren Soto, who's in the legislature, might run for Congress, and that he would run, you know, in the obvious Hispanic district that had 40% Hispanic.
And he is running for that seat.
And apparently, mm-hmm. But when we say running for that seat, but at this point, we don't really know what the seat's going to be, because
sure,
the map may change. But anyways, that's definitely another one that I'm going to be looking at, you know, in our area. And then over in the Tampa area, there was another couple districts that the Florida Supreme Court specifically said these cannot stand the way you drew them. They basically, the legislature drew a line across Tampa Bay rather than following sort of the land. They just sort of drew a line across Tampa Bay and to create some two different districts. And the Florida Supreme Court said, no, you got to follow the outline of the land mass around the bay. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is they're going to create a district that's largely Pinellas County that's going to be a lot more Democratic than it is today.
And Charlie Crist is very interested in that.
Exactly so. So we may not see the end of Charlie Crist as a Florida elected official yet, because he has suggested he's going to run. And if he gets in the race, he would certainly be a favorite.
Mm-hmm. Aubrey Jewitt is a professor of political science at the University of Central Florida. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we come back, former Florida legislator Paula Dockery and Orange County Democratic Party Chair Carlos Guillermo Smith talk about a potential solution to gerrymandering. Intersection returns after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. My next guest is Paula Dockery. She served as a Republican state legislator for 16 years from Lakeland, and she joins me now by phone. Paula, welcome.
Good to be with you.
So, in a column you wrote for the Tampa Bay Times, you applauded the move by the Florida Senate to admit fault and agree to redraw those district maps. What was your rationale for that?
Well, I think that when the voters spoke on the Fair District Amendments and said, we want you to draw these districts in a way that don't benefit one party or candidate over another, that the legislature had a responsibility in doing that. And when all these lawsuits came up and testimony was taken in the first one having to do with the congressional districts, the same process was used in the congressional districts as it was in the Senate districts. So with another costly lawsuit on the horizons and $8 million of taxpayer monies already expended, I think it made sense, not only from the perspective of cost, but also timing, since we have elections coming up, for the Senate to say, we can read the writing on the wall, let's save the taxpayers' money, let's get the lines drawn correctly and move on with the next election.
Paula Dockery, is it unusual to have legislators come back so often after a regular session?
Well, in my 16 years, we did have a few years where we came back for several special sessions. In fact, one year, I think we came back five times. It's not preferable. It is kind of an indication that you didn't get your work done, so it's not something you want to do. Sometimes things pop up, and you have to address them. But in this last legislative session, that wasn't really the case. They adjourned early without a budget and had to come back. And then, of course, redistricting, knowing that the lawsuits were out there.
Mm-hmm. So what makes the congressional redistricting effort different from the state Senate redistricting effort?
Well, there's not much difference. The biggest difference I can think of is customarily when the legislature goes in to do redistricting, the House pretty much draws the House districts and the Senate doesn't interfere much. The Senate pretty much draws the Senate districts and the House doesn't interfere much, and then both chambers jointly draw the congressional districts. So the only difference is that both chambers have a little bit more influence on the congressional districts. The other difference is that the congressional districts do go to the governor, whereas the other two districts' maps do not.
Do you get the sense that both in the congressional redistricting session and in the later session to look at the Senate maps, things are going to go smoothly?
that's a great question. I don't really know. Since the House maps weren't challenged and aren't being redrawn, it will be interesting to see whether the House tries to exert more influence into the Senate maps than is customarily done. The House and Senate, as any political observer has been noticing this past session, are not getting along particularly well, even though they're both controlled by the same party. So it's hard to say. But I do want to say one thing about redistricting.
Sure.
It is innately a political process.
Mm-hmm.
And when and regardless of which party is in control, it is political. And when you're drawing the lines and it affects the people who are sitting in the room that are drawing the lines, there's a lot of pressure on leadership to make sure people aren't pitted against each other in a district, to protect incumbents, to protect the party. So it's not that somebody has evil goals. It's that they're trying to do what's politically expedient for them. And that's why I prefer to take it out of the hands of the legislature and give it to an independent commission. And therein lies the problem, is how do you get an independent commission?
Right.
But I think when you remove that conflict of interest, that you're protecting the people in the very room that are drawing the map, I think it's just ripe for all kinds of mischief. So if you were able to take it out into a different arena where it's not tied in with a lot of other political decisions, it's best for the citizens of the state.
Having said that, though, Paula Dockery, and talking about the decision that came down from the Florida Supreme Court regarding the congressional maps now, there was some pretty stern language from the judge there, basically chastising the lawmakers for the way they went about drawing those districts. So although you say it's always going to be political, the judge did come down quite hard on the folks who drew the maps up.
Well, even the original judge in the circuit court came down hard, but then his remedy really didn't solve things. It wasn't until it was appealed to the Florida Supreme Court that they agreed with the judge's his conclusion, but yet made the remedy a little bit more fitting of the process
mm-hmm.
being skewed.
Is the idea of having an independent commission put together to create new maps, take it out of the hands of lawmakers, is that something that's been floated before? Is there any kind of traction for that?
Well, it's never going to pass the legislature, for sure. Clearly, if it was a citizen's initiative, but that takes somebody organizing it, writing the language, getting it through the Supreme Court, collecting signatures, getting it on the ballot, getting it passed. I think it would be popular, but you'd really have to put a lot of thought into how you're going to create that commission and not leave it up to the legislature to do so.
It sounds like you've given it some thought yourself.
Well, I have given it some thought, and I've also I'm big on social media. I also put up a hypothetical and asked people, if you were to create an independent commission, how many people would you put on it? Who would do the appointing? Who should be the people making up the board? And there was absolutely no consensus. I mean, some people had 20-something members, some had five. Some said it would be each party would pick several, and then you'd have independent or libertarian. I personally think what in my mind makes good districts is that you don't split up cities. You try not to split up counties. You try to keep areas together so that if I represent, I'll give you a perfect example. In my Senate district, I lived in Lakeland, but I represented five counties, and I did not even have all of Lakeland. So while I didn't have South Lakeland, even though people thought that I represented them, I had Hernando County, I had Sumter County, Lake County. That's not doing the constituents a favor because they don't know who their legislator is.
Right.
And it's not doing me a favor because I can't get around to that big an area, whereas I could certainly get around to my county. So I like keeping cities and counties together, and then you're dealing with other locally elected officials on the things that are important to our joint constituents.
That's something that people bring up when they look at a district like, for example, say, take Corrine Brown's district, that's long, kind of skinny district that loops down through a number of different counties there. How do you make sure that you can sort of keep those districts and draw them up so that they do make sense?
Well, it seems like anybody with basic computer skills could probably draw maps that make more sense geographically. But they're looking at many more factors than that. They're putting in voting history. They're putting in what incumbents live in that area. And if you could get it away from those political determinants, then I think that it would be fairly easy to draw concise, compact maps. But I want to back up and just say that fair districts did make a difference, but it had to be litigated for them to be enforced. And that turned out to be costly in terms of time and money. And that's why perhaps after this next drawing of maps, future redistrictings will go smoother. But I still think that you have that inherent conflict of interest. So a better long-term solution is to look at making it be a little more independent.
Right. And as far as making things go smoother, that's a noble ambition, but in the case of the congressional maps, there is that lawsuit hanging over them as well, the one filed by Corrine Brown, so I guess it's a matter of waiting to see what happens with that as well.
Right.
Talking about the congressional districts, though, you know, there is that court-ordered direction the legislature must now take. However, when you look at the Senate admitting fault before the courts could look at it, does that make a difference in the way the redistricting process gets passed out?
Absolutely. There is no court direction, so it's once again left up to interpretation. You're going to have the same battle with the people sitting in the room having to run for re-election. And even worse, if it was the House districts, every House member has to run every 2 years. But in the Senate, members only have to run every 4 years, and the terms are staggered so that if you had everybody with an odd number district would run in one election cycle and everybody with an even number would run in the next. If you're redrawing the Senate district, you are now forcing people to all run again. And that's a little interesting and problematic. Some people might have their total amount of years that they serve shortened if they win re-election. Some may have it lengthened if they win re-election. So it creates yet that next kind of confusing what happens now, which has ripple effects into who becomes the leader, Senate President, in 2016 and 2018. So all of these factors have ripple effects well beyond who represents who.
And beyond just who the Senate representatives are too, I guess, in
Absolutely.
Some ways.
Absolutely.
Paula Dockery, the original redistricting effort was challenged because of the perception of backroom deals and, as you wrote in your column, a contaminated process. Will future efforts be done more transparently?
You would hope so. And I think what was a little frustrating to some of us, because I was still in the legislature when this redistricting was happening, is I didn't feel like I had much opportunity to give input into the districts, and that the buzz was going around that these maps were being drawn and that very few of us would have much input into it, and that's even the legislators. Now, I was term limited, so nothing I was proposing was going to help me. It was going to be exactly what I mentioned earlier, which was, hey, why don't you try and keep Polk County whole? Why don't you try and keep the city of Lakeland whole? Mm-hmm. Why are you splitting it up? Polk County, which has 600,000 population, would be almost a perfect congressional district in terms of numbers. Instead, it has four congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
It is broken into four. How does that make sense?
I guess if you're a Polk County resident, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right?
No. And only one of them actually lives in Polk County, and that's great. We're lucky that we have one that lives in Polk County. But even he, his district has more Hillsborough County than Polk County. We're just fortunate that he had enough name recognition that we were able to get a Polk County resident to actually represent Polk County.
Mm-hmm. Paula Dockery served as a Republican state legislator for 16 years, based in Lakeland. Paula, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
I also spoke to the chair of the Orange County Democratic Party, Carlos Guillermo Smith. Like Paula Dockery, Smith says leaving the maps to state lawmakers may not be the best way to ensure they're drawn up fairly.
There's a very real opportunity in the future for us to find a better way to draw fair maps that the voters are looking for, and that's to call for an independent redistricting commission. The legislators have already proved, from both parties, to be fair, that they cannot be trusted to draw fair maps for Florida voters.
So wait, let me just get this straight. You're saying that lawmakers from both parties can't be trusted to draw maps that are fair?
Inevitably, I don't think that they can. And I'm just being honest with you. The reality is that no matter who is in control, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, there's always going to be a partisan intent to these maps. We can see that with what Congresswoman Corinne Brown has been doing. She's already threatening a lawsuit for these maps, and we don't even know what those maps are going to look like. It's totally self-serving.
So, Carlos Guillermo-Smith, you're saying that Corinne Brown is wrong to be bringing that lawsuit?
I absolutely do think that she's wrong, because what she's doing is she's trying to protect herself. Here's what we need to do.
Her point is that she's not trying to protect herself. She's trying to protect, you know, the rights of those voters, the minority voters who are in her district.
Even this new map that's been presented, that has yet to be commented on by the legislature, keeps a African-American access map available in Florida with the new District 2, I believe mm-hmm. it is, which stretches from Jacksonville all the way out to Tallahassee. It's not a perfect map, and I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for improvement there. But look, the only way, in my opinion, for us to get the fairest shot at drawing fair districts in Florida is to take the power away from the state legislature and form an independent redistricting commission that will be able to draw fair maps where voters can finally choose their elected officials, as opposed to elected officials choosing their voters, mm-hmm. which is exactly what's happening right now.
So Paula Dockery, the guest we just spoke to, she made that point too. She said this may be one solution. Is it an idea that's popular? I mean, are people talking about this? Is this something people actually want to do? Is there the will to do it?
I hope that there is. And I think that one of the ways to do it, because let's be clear, the Florida legislature is not going to be interested in imposing upon themselves the removal of their authority to draw maps. It's going to come in the form of a constitutional change, a petition from the voters, where they would force the legislature by changing the Constitution and signing a petition to form an independent redistricting commission, as they have done in Arizona. And that the voters in Arizona, which have already done that, they've been now backed up by the Supreme Court of the United States, who ruled in their favor when the state of Arizona sued the voters in Arizona and brought them to court and said, you can't take the power of redistricting away from the legislature.
Is it something that's happened in other states too besides Arizona, or are they an outlier?
I'm not sure how many other states there are, but it's a great idea, and I think it's the best option we have to be as fair as possible when drawing these new maps. But these new maps create a lot of other problems. Is there a net benefit to Democrats in the congressional maps? Maybe. But what we also have to look at in Central Florida in particular is the fact that the Hispanic voting power has been diluted and split up.
And you're talking again about these maps which haven't been ruled into law yet, these potential maps, the idea that's been put out by the—
Sure. Right. The starting point, the maps have just been published that were drawn by legislative staff. The starting point here is that they have taken Congressional District 9, which is a Hispanic access district.
This is Alan Grayson's district.
Yes, and they've diluted the Hispanic vote again and broken that voting block up into three different congressional districts. I'm sure that we're going to see many legislators who are going to advocate to re-strengthen the Hispanic voting block in that district.
So, Carlos Guillermo-Smith, you're running for a House seat. If you're voted in, is the idea of an independent committee to draw maps, is that something you'll be supporting?
I absolutely would support a bill and possibly sponsor a bill and file it myself that would take the redistricting authority away from legislators like myself if I win.
So are you saying that you wouldn't trust yourself to draw maps in a fair way?
I would trust myself. But you know what the reality is that in Tallahassee, the process is just poisoned with politics. And folks up there can't be trusted, which is why the best scenario to make sure that the voters have their voices heard and have the ability to elect someone of their own, as opposed to politicians choosing the voters, is to create an independent redistricting commission. Absolutely. And I'm going to fight for that.
Mm-hmm. So the former maps were challenged by the League of Women Voters, which led to that ruling from the Florida Supreme Court. If either party, Democrats or Republicans, want to challenge the new maps once they're drawn up, what's the process there?
Well, the process there is going to be another lawsuit, which is going to entangle the legislature again in a drawn-out process. I mean, let's think about where we started. These maps were drawn in 2011 and into 2012 and finally settled on in 2012 before the elections. And, you know, the legislature has been sued over and over again. They came mm-hmm. back. They've now had three redistricting special sessions to try to fix the problems that they first created when they drew these maps and thwarted the will of the voters. Every single time we have to do this, we're wasting taxpayer money and taxpayer resources. And that's a problem.
So what about the average voter? Do they care about these efforts, or is this kind of inside baseball? What have people been telling you?
A lot of it is inside baseball, Matt, but here's what's really important, because a lot of people are frustrated out there. They feel like in Tallahassee and in Washington, it's all politics as usual. But what they really think of, Matt, is they think that their vote doesn't count. This issue of redistricting and being able to draw fair maps has an opportunity for voters to finally have their voices heard and to finally elect leaders that can make a change in state government if redistricting is done right. So this issue, although it may not be on everyone's radar, is absolutely crucial to democracy and should be one of the things that voters should be paying attention to first and foremost.
Carlos Guillermo-Smith is the chairman of the Orange County Democrats. He's also a candidate for Florida House District 49. Carlos, thanks for coming in and speaking to me.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Appreciate it.
Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Florida Hospital. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. Join us on Friday morning at 9 for the weekly news roundtable. We'll be taking your calls. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening. Thank you.